On November 12, 2010, the Chronicle of Higher Education published an article titled The Shadow Scholar, in which, using the pseudonym Ed Dante, Philadelphia-based freelance writer Dave Tomar detailed his career as a writer of student papers. The article was met with a colorful mix of outrage, empathy, and recognition. In fact, it went on to become the most read and commented on article in the Chronicle's history. The article touched off a far-ranging conversation about academic integrity, about ethics, about the technological implications of cheating, and about the cultural context in which cheating occurs. In the new book, The Shadow Scholar, How I Made a Living Helping College Kids Cheat, Tomar tells the sometimes shocking, always entertaining, and ultimately sobering details of his decade of writing book reports, admission essays, research papers, and dissertations, at the same time pulling back the curtain on the big business of college. We welcome Dave Tomar to the roundtable this morning. Thank you very much for being with us.
Joe, thanks so much for having me.
It is a pleasure to have you with us. How much do you regret what you did?
Well, you know, it's hard to regret getting that kind of an education. It's not as though I would trade the knowledge that I've received. But at the same time, it feels really good to not be doing it anymore, you know, to be, if I can, no longer on the side of evil. You know, so while I don't necessarily regret it, you know, I take responsibility for it, and I hope that I can help to fix some of the problems that I've contributed to.
When you talk about those problems that you contributed to, basically robbing the kids the opportunity of doing these particular projects by themselves.
Sure. I spent 10 years writing papers for students, and, you know, I did it to make a living. But at the same time, I was, in fact, receiving their education.
What is it about a student and the position that they are in that they would come to someone like you to help them with a paper, with a dissertation, with an application, with an essay? Where are they that they come to you?
Well, you know, the longer I've done it, the more I've found that there are quite a lot of motives for doing it. But, you know, when push comes to shove, I think first and foremost, kids go to school to get their degrees and to get their grades. And learning for a lot of students is completely secondary. So if they can find an easy way to get their work done, or, you know, a way that at least helps them get a leg up if they already know how to do it themselves, they will take that opportunity.
What are we talking as far as cost?
I got paid in a range of $10 to $20 a page, which means that most of the companies that I was working for would get paid double that, you know. And for me, you know, admittedly, it was not the best paying job in the world, but as a writer, it was certainly the best pay that I was able to find, and the job with the most available work. Really, there never seemed to be a basement.
When you talk about the companies that you work for, so how did that work? What was the structure?
There are a great many of them in all of different structures. The more successful ones that I have worked with, usually they work with independent contractors, which is what I was. And you would visit a website regularly, and new assignments would come in, and you would click to be assigned them. Once you're assigned it, you're responsible for it, and it's yours until submission.
When it comes to writing about something that is out of context, in the sense of you aren't taking the course, so what is it like for you then to write a paper for a student and put yourself into their shoes and be able to produce something that will get them the grade they're looking for?
For me, Google has always been a very powerful tool, and that is really all I've needed to become at least a substitute expert, if you will, on any given subject.
Once you submitted a paper in the name of another student, how much did that student hold you accountable for the grade they received?
Well, you know, the truth of the matter is, most of the companies that you work for, they take the legal precautions to let you know that this is a study guide. It's not intended to be handed in. So now this wasn't an unfair system. If a customer came to me and said, "You've completed my work, but you didn't fulfill all the instructions I originally asked for," I would provide them with a revision, and that was company policy. But it's a very different story if a customer comes back to you and says, "I got a D. I'm very unhappy with this." Unfortunately, I would have to say to the customer, "Well, you really ought not to have handed it in. This was for your guidance in study."
To use your word, customer, how much actual contact did you have with them?
A bit of direct contact. Most of the time you would use the company's website as an intermediary and there would be a forum for messaging. But you would interact directly with the customers quite a bit. And this was necessary because, of course, paper writing is not an exact science, and sometimes there needs to be some extra communication. Customers will ask you questions. You'll need to ask them questions. They'll submit direct sources to you. So I did interact quite a bit with my customers.
So as far as you're concerned, what do you think higher education and universities and colleges can learn from what you are saying in this book of how you were able to survive and what you were providing these students?
Well, the bottom line is there's just so many college students without the necessary skills, and for a lot of them, they're in over their heads. So I think that needs to change. I think we need to pay a lot better attention to who's going to college and to make sure that they're ready for it.
Now, obviously, you know, I teach some college classes. It's a small liberal arts college, and you have the students. And as an adjunct, you know, I get to know them pretty well. And I'd like to think, and maybe this is a fool's errand on my part, but I would like to think that if a student handed in a paper, I would be able to tell in some way, shape, or form whether they wrote it or not, just by the time that I've spent with that student and know what they are capable of in their handling of the subject. Did you run into that?
Not a great deal, and primarily because there's so many forums for education now that really don't allow the professor to get to know the student, where you have, when I went to Rutgers, I mean, the lecture halls were so large that, you know, I really only knew professors that I made it a point to know. If it was my intention to slide by in this class, obviously I wouldn't have made an effort to reach out to the professor. Also, you know, distance education, online learning, and for-profit schools, they make it extraordinarily easy to be anonymous and get the grades that you need. So, you know, on top of that, in your position, perhaps you suspect somebody's cheating. You say, "This guy can't form a complete sentence when I speak to him. How is he writing this well?"
Right.
Well, you know, try making that allegation, and you might be met with quite a bit of opposition.
Well, certainly. But by the same token, you know, you have the idea of what it is and can certainly talk to the student about what it is that they've written. But you bring up a great point about the much larger scale of universities and colleges where you're a number. And it is it's fascinating because that's the kind of environment that allows this kind of thing to go on. But also, really, as you point out in the book, is just one of many predatory activities that's taking place on behalf of the student.
Sure, absolutely. You know, to me, another issue, and I think, you know, when you read the book, you find that I discuss this a lot. Well, it's not just about cheating. It's about the cost of education and about what you're getting on the other side, that college costs so much more than it ever has, that the opportunities for the Generation Y getting out of school are frightening. You know, I read a Newsweek article that made quite a stir last week, and it was basically, the question was, is college a lousy investment? You know, now I don't think college is a lousy investment, but I do think it's getting worse. I think that the margin between what it is supposed to improve your lifetime earnings by and what that experience is immediately after you get out of school, I think, you know, the opportunities are certainly a lot less immediate and a lot less bright than they used to be.
And I apologize for being pie in the sky here for a moment, but there is the fundamental idea that we seek college, we seek further education to indeed educate ourselves, to find out more information. And what is ironic in the book is that this is what you received as a bonus of doing this type of work for as long as you did it, but ultimately it is what you deprived the students of who were hiring you.
Sure. You know, and my story is laden with irony because, you know, I despised school, which is a shame because if you look at the job that I did, it's very obvious that I love learning, you know, and I'm not saying this, you know, in a self-serving way. You would blow your brains out if you had to do this job on a day-in, day-out basis and you didn't love to learn. Now, why should school have been so alienating to me? I didn't struggle there. Grades were not a problem. It wasn't a challenge. It was that, frankly, I thought we're just here to get grades, and why is that important?
And how aware do you think the colleges and universities and the institutions of higher learning are of you, of the people doing what you do?
At this stage, increasingly aware, and you know, there was that mix when my first article came out of people who were shocked and outraged and others that were very hostile towards me and said, you know, you're just rubbing it in our faces. We already know that this stuff is going on. What, you know, the point of my book is to say it's not just that this stuff's going on, it's that we haven't really discussed why and we haven't really acknowledged it. And I think that maybe there is not as great an awareness about the severe crisis that our higher education system is facing. You know, I'm thinking to a really interesting moment during the Democratic Convention when Bill Clinton spoke, and he spoke briefly and eloquently, I thought, on higher education. And he says the United States is now 16th in the world among young adults, percentage of young adults holding college degrees. And, you know, that was an interesting fact. What was more interesting was the gasp in the room, that all the delegates and office holders and celebrities there gasped and they were shocked and they didn't realize just how bad things had gotten.
When you look at the information that you provided, what was the toughest assignment you ever did, or the paper that you had to write?
I do write a chapter that in gory detail explains the several days that I spent writing a paper on international financial reporting standards, and it was 160 pages, or the final might have ended up being 175 pages in all. If you ever want to spend a nightmare of a couple of days, that's the way to do it.
And is it worth the student? I guess it is for them to pay you that much money. I mean, that's
when you compare it to what books cost and what college costs and what your wasted investment would be like if you couldn't fight your way through college. It's a pretty marginal cost, you know. And I think for a lot of students, you've already invested this far in your education and you're just paying your way through. I mean, it's very a very economically loaded system. As we know, it's extremely hierarchical. And, you know, to an extent, the message is you pay for a good education and you pay for the degree. So for some people, it may be a worthwhile investment. Now, that's not me condoning it or saying it's the right thing to do, but being pragmatic, there are students that feel, you know, my university is telling me that I'm here to compete, that I am here to do the best to get a good job in the future, and that's really what I'm trying to do, not to learn, not to be enriched. Now, I don't think that's a very pie-in-the-sky idea. I think it's a beautiful idea. I just think, unfortunately, for a lot of reasons that I think are largely economic, that is a much older idea, and the pressure on students is so much greater to just get out and be able to find employment. They can't sit and worry about whether they're growing personally and internally.
But once they find that employment, once they find that job and they're out there, and God forbid they have to know the information that was included in that paper on the financial system, aren't they screwed?
They could do what I did and Google it and learn it in a day. But, you know, quite frankly, I feel like there are many students that are getting out of universities that have gone about it honestly, that have gotten whatever the best grades they can. They're going to get to their jobs and they're going to find that they lack some of those same critical skills. You know, I mean, college is a lot about cramming for tests and being graded by machine. So it's not as though by going to college and doing everything you're supposed to, you're inherently getting those skills.
This for-profit college world that you write about comes off quite sleazy in the book. I assume that was intended.
Well, you know, frankly, it's not a lot of effort on my part to make them look sleazy. President Obama has really been very vocal on this point recently, which is that there is an absolute need for transparency with these schools. And it's true, because they really only exist to make money. And they prey on people, you know, without great means or without necessarily the background to get into a better university. And as a result, you have people coming out into the workforce with what they think are degrees, what they think are skills, but a complete lack of employability. And, a fact that I read, and I think it was in 2010 or 2011, when the Department of Education published this finding, that 26% of the borrower population were students in for-profit schools. And 43% of all loan defaulters were from the same population. So when you look at an imbalance like that, I mean, they're just not getting the results for this incredible sum of money.
When you decided to pull back the curtain and write about this, was it surprising to you that the Chronicle of Higher Education would want to hear your story and publish your article?
You know what? It was surprising to me that this was a story of intrigue to anybody. And to tell you the main reason why is because I was never particularly secretive about it in my world. You know, when people asked me what I did for a living, I told them. And, quite frankly, it's because I was always out there looking to advance and to find different work, But, I was a little surprised, and then once the reaction came in, I could understand exactly why it was such an important issue to them. Apparently, a lot of people didn't realize.
Were you making a living? Were you making enough money to get by?
I was, not always comfortably, and a lot of my book details that financial struggle. It's interesting. There's a lot of response to the book amongst mainstream media outlets and baby boomer populations that they look at the book and they say there are a lot of important messages about education, what's wrong with education, and how we need to deal with that, and that's important. And then in a more dismissive sense, they've said, a lot of the personal stuff is of secondary importance. And I don't see it that way, and I don't think that the Gen X or Gen Y people will see it that way, because this experience of getting out of school and struggling to make a living, which I certainly had my share of, that's a very real and very frightening experience that I don't think should be dismissed, because that's what translates to the great economic burden that this entire country is shouldering. So for me, yeah, I struggled. This is a job that you get better and more prolific with time. And so I was able to become more comfortable at points, but, with a tremendous amount of work. But as I talk about in the book, I never intended to be a guy who wrote papers for a living. I always aspired to be a writer. So hopefully this also gives me the opportunity to do that in a legitimate way and to write another book.
The name of the book is The Shadow Scholar: How I Made a Living Helping College Kids Cheat. It is published by Bloomsbury. Dave Tomar is the author. Dave, thank you very much for being with us. I appreciate it.
Joe, thanks very much for having me.
Thank you very much. Again, the name of the book is The Shadow Scholar: How I Made a Living Helping College Kids Cheat. It's published by Bloomsbury. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.